So now we are starting with this chapter of structure of atoms and molecules and nuclei. Let's start with how this stuff took place. So what happened is the Greek philosophers, I can't say his name, I am not able to spell it, but the second one was Democritus. First one, I'm not able to spell his name, so I will not insult him, rather let it be anybody. If you want, I will spell it. Leucippus. Okay, so these were the first scientists to propose in the 5th century BC that matter is made of indivisible particles called atoms. They told that matter is made of atoms. Now there came Dalton. So Dalton gave his atomic theory in early 19th century, and according to this theory, matter is made up of indestructible particles. Atoms of a given element are identical, and atoms can combine with other atoms to form new substances. That atoms were indestructible and was shown wrong by J.J. Thomson. He told atoms are indestructible, and J.J. Thomson showed that it is wrong. So, he then proceeded to give his atomic model. J.J. Thomson proceeded to give his atomic model, okay? And after that came Ernest Rutherford, then came Niels Bohr. So a lot of people tried to mess their hands in it. So an atom contains of tiny molecules and nucleus whose size is about 10,000 times smaller than the size of an atom. And the nucleus contains all the positive charge of the atom and also 99.9% of its mass. So in this chapter, we will also study properties of the nucleus, the forces that keep it intact, and its radioactive decay. And we will also try to understand the properties about the energy and how energy can be obtained from atom. So let's first see all the failures. See, it's a saying that we move from failures to success. In the same way in science, you first study all the failure theories and all the failure concepts, and then you move to one which is success. And then too, you have a doubt that it is a real success or not. So you never know, whatever you are studying, is it really applicable or not. You may have to study things which are not really existing. So that's the process, right? Your thinking develops from failures to success. So now let's start with some failures. Thomson's atomic model. Thomson performed several experiments with glass vacuum tube, wherein a voltage was applied between two electrodes inside an evacuated tube. The cathode was seen to emit rays which produced a glow when they struck the glass behind the anode. So by studying the properties of these rays, he concluded that the rays are made up of negatively charged particles, which he called as electrons. This demonstrated that atoms are not indestructible, and atoms contain electrons which are emitted by the cathode. So Thomson proposed his model of an atom in 1903. And according to this model, an atom is a sphere having an uniform positive charge in which electrons are embedded. Next, there are various models like Giga-Marsden experiment. Then there is Rutherford's atomic model. Now, Rutherford's atomic model is an important one. So, the results of Giga-Marsden experiment were not being explained by Thomson's model. So, in that model, the positive charge was uniformly spread over the large sphere constituting the atom. The volume density of the positive charge will thus be very small, and all of the incident alpha particles will get deflected only through very small angles. So Rutherford argued that the alpha particles which were deflected back must have encountered a massive particle with large positive charge so that it was repelled back. So from the fact that extremely small number of alpha particles turned back while most others passed through almost undeflected, this guy concluded that the positively charged particle in the atom must be very small in size and must contain most of the mass of the atom. From the experimental data, the size of this particle was found to be 10 femtometer. 10 femtometer is so small, but then too, it's huge for an atom. So this 10 raised to minus 15 is 10 femtometer. And it is about 10 raised to minus 5 times the size of the atom. So the volume of this particle was thus found to be 10 raised to minus 15 times that of an atom. think about it. I mean, if you try to think about all this stuff, most of the world is empty, and in fact we are mostly empty. Yeah, it's weird, right? The nucleus is having a volume of almost 10 raised to minus 15 in comparison with the atom. In comparison with the atoms especially, it is minus 5. 10 raised to minus 5 is a lot. So that's the size of the nucleus with respect to an atom. Other remaining part is just empty. So what Rutherford proposed, that the entire positive charge and 99% of the mass of an atom is concentrated in the central nucleus, and the electrons are the ones which revolve around it in circular orbits. So this revolution is similar to that of planets around the sun in the solar system. Some guys even think now also that the revolution of the planets around the sun is similar to the revolution of electrons around the atom. But people don't know that there are shells. There is S shell, there is P shell, there is D shell, there is F shell. These shells, they have quantum numbers. This is not being told at all. The reason? We are studying the failure theories, then we are studying the real theories. So the children, the students who study only the failure theories, know only the failure stuff. They don't know what's real. Okay, so I was one of them who thought that 8 electrons is the octet rule and it's all the real stuff and it is applicable now also. But then I understood this stuff. So what Rutherford did is that he proposed that entire mass is at the center, and he said that these revolve just like the solar system and the planets, which revolve around the sun. The revolution of the electrons was necessary because without it, the electrons will fall into the positively charged nucleus and the atom will collapse. Okay, that's what we don't want. So the space between the orbits of the electrons and the nucleus is mostly empty, and thus most alpha particles pass through this empty space undeflected, and a very few which are in direct line with the tiny nucleus or are extremely close to it get repelled and get deflected through the large angles. This model also explains why no positively charged particles are emitted by atoms while negatively charged electrons are emitted by atoms. So this is because of the large mass of the nucleus, which does not get affected when force is applied on the atom. Now let's see the difficulties with Rutherford's model. Though this model is in the basic form, it is still accepted, but it faced certain difficulties. We know that from Maxwell's equations that an accelerated charge emits electromagnetic radiation. An electron in Rutherford's model moves uniformly along a circular orbit around its nucleus. Even though the magnitude of its velocity is constant, its direction changes continuously, and so the motion is an accelerated motion. Thus, the electron should emit electromagnetic radiation continuously, and also as it emits radiation, its energy will decrease, and consequently the radius of its orbit will decrease. It will then spiral into the nucleus, causing the atom to collapse and lose its atomic properties. So as the electron loses energy, its velocity changes continuously, and the frequency of the radiation emitted will also change continuously as it moves towards the nucleus. None of these things are observed, okay? This is all our theory. So firstly, most atoms are very stable, and secondly, they do not constantly emit electromagnetic radiation and definitely not of varying frequency. I mean, it's an atom, bro. It's the simplest thing, and it would emit electromagnetic radiation, or that too of different frequencies, is what you expect. It's a lot of expectations, okay? So the atoms have to be given energy. They require energy, or else they will not work. You require energy, you require energy drinks. In the same way, atoms require energy. Without energy, why can you expect it to work? Okay, we need food. Atom needs food. There are quarks as well. The highest rated question: what are quarks? Now the scientists want to find the quarks as well. They want to hold one in their hand. So if you know a thing, you are made of that similar stuff. You are made of carbon. You are made of everything which you are searching about. And now you want to find that same thing. I mean, it is in you and you want to find it. I mean, I don't understand this stuff. Why do they want to find the quarks? They are wasting their energy. Rather make a spaceship and let's move to Mars. Yeah, so they emit electromagnetic radiations of particular frequencies. And Rutherford's model failed on all these counts. Maxwell completely finished Rutherford's theory. Actually, it was very good. For the time being, his discoveries and his precision, the way he thought, the way he experimented, it was a very unique way. And it needed to be appreciated. But sadly, this guy, Rutherford, respected scientist, he never got a Nobel Prize. I feel very bad about it. Mostly all other scientists who were studying especially about the atom got a Nobel Prize, but this guy, he didn't. So anyways, atomic spectra is what we see next. We know that when a metallic object is heated, it emits radiation, okay, and this radiation is of different wavelengths. So when this radiation is passed through a prism, now this is an experiment time here. We have brought a prism with us. We are getting the radiation of an atom through a metallic object, and we are going to pass it through a prism. And when we do so, we get a continuous spectrum. And the case is that different heat hydrogen gas inside a glass tube to high temperatures. So what we do is we heat hydrogen gas in a glass tube to very high temperatures, and the emitted radiation has only a few selected wavelengths, and when passed through a prism, we get what is called a line spectrum. So you can search for hydrogen spectrum on Google and you will find a diagram in which you will see a red color light at 650 nanometer, a purple color or a violet color one at 410 nanometer, a blue color at 434 nanometer, and a green colored one at 486 nanometer. Besides, there are some wavelengths present in ultraviolet ranges as well. So the wavelengths in between these wavelengths do not see a lot of light. These are the brightest points, and the lines seen in the spectrum are called emission lines. So these are the emission lines. Hydrogen atom also emits radiation at other values in the ultraviolet and infrared range. So the spectral lines can be divided into groups known as series with the names of the scientists who studied them. So it's nice, right? We remember that Balmer series, Paschen series, these are actually scientists. So the series starting from shorter wavelengths go to longer wavelengths. The shortest is Lyman, there is Balmer, then is Paschen, and there is Pfund. Lyman, Balmer, Paschen, Pfund. Its initial acronym will be LBPP. Okay, so the schematic diagram of this series could be found on Google. You can just say Lyman, Balmer, Paschen, Pfund hydrogen spectrum series. You will find it. So in each of these series, the separation between two successive lines decreases as we go towards shorter wavelength, and they reach a limiting value where they stop. So the observed wavelengths of the emission lines are found to be obey the relation 1 by lambda equals r into 1 by n1 square minus 1 by m2 square. Here lambda is the wavelength of a line, r is a constant, and n and m are integers. N equals 1, 2, 3 respectively for Lyman, Balmer and Paschen series, while m takes all integral values greater than n for that series. The wavelength decreases with increase in m. Difference in wavelengths of successive lines in each series can be calculated from very good diagrams, and this can be shown to decrease with increase in m. Thus, the successive lines in a given series come closer and closer and ultimately reach the values of lambda equals n squared by r, and in it, the limit is from m to infinity. For different values of n, this limit seems to be changing. So after this, we will now study the Bohr's atomic model in the next session, because Bohr is a guy who took a lot of time, and I also took a lot of time to study him. So Bohr's atomic model is big, and the most surprising thing about Bohr's model is the one which you understand at the end of it, and that is it is applicable only for hydrogen. Yeah, so you need to study a complete book. Yeah, his book, The Principia, is very book, and his book is very big. So that's it for now. Let's move it in the next episode. Till then, take care, stay safe, see ya, bye bye.